There was a great sage called Uddalaka, the son of Aruna. He had a young boy, his son by name Shvetaketu. For some reason or other, the father was not in a position to school him, teach him personally, or give him instruction. The boy was playful, running about here and there with the children of the neighborhood, and never knew what study was, what learning was, what education was. The father one day called the boy and said, "My dear son, in our family, nobody is a Brahmin merely by name. He has to be worth his name. That means to say, he has to be filled with the real knowledge of the Brahmin. And we should not call ourselves so merely by name. I am a relative of so and so. You are a relative of a great man. You need not be a great person. So likewise, we should not be in a position to merely say, I am the friend of so and so, I am the son of such and such father. We should also be equally so. So you go to your Gurukula and study and then come." Shvetaketu harunaya atatagumha pito vacha shvetaketu vasa brahmacharyam. Be a student, observe brahmacharya means observe the rule of a student in a Gurukula. Navai saumya asmat kulinaha anunuchya brahma bandhuri bhavati. The boy was sent. The boy went to a Gurukula for study. And he underwent the whole course of education. He was 12 years old when he went from the house of the father. When he returned after education, he was 24. So he studied for 12 years. He studied all the Vedas, all the Shastras, all the scriptures. And there was practically nothing religious which he had not learned. Now this learning had somehow the effect of swelling of the head of this boy into a pride. He began to feel that nobody was equal to him in learning. He knew all things, almost omniscient. So when he came at the age of 24 to the father at home, he would not speak because of the learning that he had in his head. He was very dignifiedly looking. Without uttering a word, he went to the father. Very egoistically, he started behaving. He would not utter one word because of the depth of his knowledge. And father observed what has happened to this child. He does not speak. He seems to be very wise. And he is very egoistic. He is puffed up with learning. He thinks he knows everything. He is very strange indeed. So, having observed this, the father called the boy one day and said, "You don't speak. You seem to be very learned. And you have put up a very egoistic look. I can't understand what this means." Dvadasya varsha upetya chaturvimshati varsha sarvan vedan adhitya mahamana anujanamani tabdha e aya kagamha pito vacha. Shvetaketo yannu somya idam mahamana anujanamani tabdho asi utatasma desham Adesham apraksyaha. Have you learnt everything from your gurus so that you seem to feel you know everything and you are full of pride? Do you know everything? You have studied everything? Do you know that by knowing which everything is known? Do you know that by which the unheard becomes heard, the unthought becomes thought? Yena ashrutam shrutam bhavati amatam matam avijnatam vijnatam. Is your guru or the preceptor from whom you have studied the four Vedas, has he taught you these secrets by which things which are not heard of are heard of, things which cannot be thought of can be thought of, that which cannot be understood can be understood? There is something by knowing which everything can be known. Have you heard of this? Your teachers have imparted this knowledge to you. What is the very strange thing? The boy has never heard such things. How can an unheard of thing be heard? An unthought thing be thought? An ununderstood thing be understood? This is not given in the Vedas or the Shastras. Nowhere anything is mentioned. Katham nu bhagava sa adesha bhavati. What is this? The boy said, what is this? I don't know. I have never been taught this thing. He was humbled a little bit. So there is something at least which he did not know. If you have never heard of a thing, how can you hear of it? If you can never think of a thing, how can you think of it? And if it cannot be understood at all, how can you understand it? But there is a way, says the father, there is a way by which you can execute this feat of knowing everything, even if it cannot be known normally. Supersensible things can be known, and everything can be known by the knowledge of a single thing. The father put this question to the boy. The boy knew nothing about these things. How is it possible? The boy queried the father, what is the meaning of this question? How is it possible for one to know in this manner? Well, I give you an example, how it is possible. Without going into the detail of the subject, the father gives only an example, an analogy, how such a thing is possible. If you know what earth is made of, you also know at the same time what anything that is made of earth also is made of. Because all the articles that are manufactured out of earth are constituted of earth essentially. So I give you an example how many things can be known by the knowledge of one thing. Pot, tumbler, plate, etc., etc., vessels of this kind manufactured out of clay are clay only in reality. So if you know what clay is, you know what clay tumbler is, clay plate is, clay glass is, etc. You understand what I say? Yes. Yes. because these are only shapes taken by that substance called clay. And what do you mean by an earthen pot? Is only a name that you have given to a shape taken by the earth. So is the case with certain other things. You take a nugget of gold, and you know this ingot of gold can be cast into various shapes as ornaments, etc. It can be a necklace, it can be a ring, it can be anything. Now, if you know what gold is really, what gold is made of essentially, you will also know what a gold necklace is made of, what a gold ring is made of, etc. Because gold ring, gold necklace and the like are gold only in their essence. These are only shapes, forms taken by the essence which is the substance, gold. If you take a pair of scissors for instance, made of iron, you know what it is made of, it is made of iron. Then you will also know what anything else made of iron also is made of. It may be a hammer, it may be a nail, it may be an axe, it does not matter what it is. All these things are the shape taken by the same iron which is in the pair of scissors. Now, this earthen pot is a very strange thing altogether. The earthen pot is earth plus a name that you have given to a shape of the earth. There is no such thing as a pot really speaking. You touch a pot and tell me, are you touching a pot or touching clay? What are you touching? You cannot say what you are touching. You will say, well, it is difficult for me to say, am I touching the pot or touching the clay? You are touching the clay and you say you touch the pot. The pot is in your head. It is not outside. The what is there really is the clay. Your conception is pot, but the substance is clay only. The interference of space and time in the substance called earth is responsible for this peculiar shape that it has taken. So, the pot made of earth is only a name, a play of speech merely. You are only uttering some words indicating a shape taken by the earth which is the substance. Now, what do you mean by the shape taken by the earth? What is shape? You can't understand what shape also is. The shape also is earth itself. You are interfering with the substance called the earth by your notional interpretation of its connection with space and time. So, the earthen pot is nothing but a conceptual interpretation that you are introducing into the substance that is called clay. There is no such thing as pot, it does not exist. Yet you have coined two words. On one side there is the word called clay, the other side there is the word called pot. Now you have got two names indicating one and the same thing. Now, why should you have two names if the substance is only one? Vacharambhanam vikaro namadheyam. यथा सौम्य एकेन मृत्पिण्डेन सर्व मृण्मयम् विज्ञातम् स्यात् वाचारम्भणम् विकारो नामधेयम् मृत्युकीर्त्येव सत्यम्। You are under the illusion of perception. You are confounded in your notion of the substance. There is a mistake that you commit in your interpretation of reality when you say that there is a pot. The pot does not exist. What exists there is only the clay. And what you call the pot is only a concept in your mind. So is the case with everything else in this world.
The illustrations provided by the sage Uddalaka make out that object forms are inseparable from concepts in the mind. If they had not been organically involved in the mind of the perceiver, they would be objectively existent and could be physically sensed by the organs of perception. Now, in the analogy of the pot, about which we were discussing yesterday, an effect of a cause, namely clay. The pot, when it is properly analyzed, is known to contain no element apart from clay. In spite of the fact that people go around saying that there is a pot, it is very strange indeed that there is no pot there and yet we say there is a pot. Are we under an illusion? Is it true that every human being is equally misconceived in the perception of things? Or do we give names to things only for the sake of convenience in social life? Now, mere practical utilitarian convenience cannot be regarded as an objective reality. If we give names to things only to distinguish their forms one from the other for the purpose of practical life in the world, that would not sanction a philosophical or even a scientific existence to the counterparts of these names. We must accept that we are only giving names for the purpose of our notional convenience in workaday life. But there are no corresponding objects. If this is a fact, diversity would cease to be at one stroke. It will imply that all the variety that we see in this world is only a nomenclature. It is a jumble of ideas expressed in language. The ideas that have got concretized into apparent realities, as if they are really there and trying to pounce upon us like hobgoblins. The variety of things, the diversity of objects and the multitudinousness that this world is apparently is not really there. If it is true that a substance, when it is converted into a shape or a form called the effect, does not introduce into the effect anything new other than what was contained in the cause alone. If clay is there in the pot and nothing else is there in the pot, it would be pointless to call that shape as a pot. We have unnecessarily created a trouble by calling a particular form of clay by another name. And likewise, we can call the same mass of clay by a third or a fourth name, a tumbler, etc., etc. So we have created a variety in our minds, while the variety is not really there. So this is a philosophical conclusion that automatically follows on a careful investigation into the nature of the creation of variety in respect of the effects that are manufactured out of causes, while the causes are uniform in their nature ultimately. So this is the outcome of an analysis of what Uddalaka mentioned in very plain, simple language to the boy Shvetaketu. Yatha somya ekena mrutpindena sarvam mranmayam vijnatam syat vacharambhanam vikaro namadheyam mrutiketeva satyam. As is the case with the clay in its relation to the effects produced out of it, so is the case with everything else in this world out of which effects are produced, whether these causes are iron or gold or wood or anything for the matter of that. The boy could not understand the significance of this teaching. Well, it is very clear, we understand what you say. But it is terrifying. It seems to shake the very foundation of our belief in the world. And it looks that we cannot exist at all, if this is the truth. My gurus did not appear to have understood all these things. They never taught me these things, said the boy to the father. Navai nunam bhagavantaha ते एतद् अवेदिशु यद्येतद् अवेदिश्यन् कथमेन अवक्षत्. इफ दे हैड नोन दिस, व्हाई शुड दे हैव नॉट टोल्ड दिस टू मी. आई नेवर हर्ड दिस थिंग्स अप टू दिस टाइम. आई हैव स्टडीड द फोर वेदास, आई हैव स्टडीड द शास्त्रास, बट नथिंग ऑफ दिस काइंड वॉज हर्ड फ्रॉम एनी क्वार्टर्स. What is this? Will you kindly explain, Holy Father, who is now also the Guru of Shvetaketu? Bhavan bravitu iti tatha somya iti hovacha. The Father said, well, you sit down, I shall explain to you what all this mystery is. There was one being alone in the beginning. It is not true that there is a variety of beings. Sadeva somya idam agra asit. My dear boy, there was only a single reality existent. The so-called variety was not there. It was one, it was without a second. There was nothing outside it, external to it, to compete with it, to equal it, or to be different from it. There is no conceivable reality in this world of this nature. Whatever be the stretch of your imagination, you cannot conceive of something outside which nothing is. At least space would be there, time would be there, something would be there. But even space and time are objects, externals, effects that came afterwards in the process of creation. And therefore, they too are negatived in the case of this reality that alone was. There was absolutely no difference whatsoever originally. There was neither external differentiation nor internal variety. As they usually say, there was not sajatiya bheda or vijatiya bheda or swagata bheda. These are the stock words in Vedanta philosophy, which makes out that differences are of three kinds usually, as we observe in this world, and these differences were not there in the reality. There can be internal variety or difference, like the difference observed among the branches of the tree. The tree is one, but the branches are many. So there is internal differentiation or variety in a single body. Right hand is different from left hand. One finger is different from another finger. One part of the body is different from another part of the body. One branch of a tree is different from another branch of the same tree. So this is swagata bheda, difference in one's own self, one's own body. Though you are single, an object is a unity by itself, yet there is an internal variety of this nature. There was no such variety in the absolute being originally. There is also another kind of difference that we observe in this world. One human being is different from another human being. Though everyone is a human being, human beings are different. One cow is different from another cow. This is sajatiya bheda. That is difference in a single species or a category of the same kind. Even that kind of difference was not there. Then vijatiya bheda is the third kind of difference. A tree is different from a stone. Man is different from an animal. So this is a difference observed in different kind of species or makeups. That also was not there. So the absolute reality was completely free from these possible differences. It was that tremendous unity, inconceivable by the human mind. Sadeva somya idam agra asit ekameva advitiyam. Tat ha eka ahu asadeva idam agra asit ekameva advitiyam tasmat asata sajjayata. There are some people who think that originally non-being was, not being was, but non-being was. Asadvaidam agrasi, non-being is sometimes regarded as the origin of things under peculiar conditions. How is it possible that being can come from non-being? Has anyone seen such a phenomenon? Something can produce something. How can nothing produce something? We have never heard of such a possibility. So Uddalaka says, my dear boy, though it is true that there are people who hold the doctrine that non-being was originally, and being proceeded out of non-being as an effect, this is not a practicability. It is inconceivable. Non-being cannot be the cause of being. Nor can we say that being is the cause of being, it is a tautology in language. Ye is the cause of ye, you cannot say that. It is a meaningless way of expression. If being is not the cause of being, then what is the cause of being? Non-being? Not possible. Non-being cannot be the cause of being. Being also is not the cause of being. Then what is the cause of being? No cause. There cannot be a cause for being. So it must be a causeless being. If it has a cause, we must explain what that cause could be. And the cause should be either being or non-being. There cannot be a third thing. Being cannot be the cause of being. Non-being also cannot be the cause of being. So there is no cause for being. It is causeless existence. It is useless and pointless to say that non-being can be the origin in any manner whatsoever of being. Kudastu khalu somya evam syat. How is this possible? It is a strange doctrine, a humorous saying indeed, to hold that something can come out of nothing. Iti ho vacha katham asata sajjayeta. How being can come from non-being? Sattve vasomya idam agra asit. Now listen to my conclusion. I hold that being alone was, not non-being. Ekameva advitiyam. So I repeat what I have told you already. Being alone was. Now, it is non-dual being. It is not like my being and your being, the being of this or that. It is not an individual being, it is not a particular being, it is not something connected with any object. It is being as such. Inconceivable because it is not an object. The mind can think what is outside it, it cannot think anything else. But being cannot be something outside the mind, because the mind also is rooted in being. Therefore, it is not a subject for discussion by the senses or for conception by the mind. It is not an object of any kind, either physical or conceptual. That means to say, it cannot be investigated scientifically nor argued about philosophically. What sort of thing is it then? Well, if it could be understood so easily, then we would be blessed. But it cannot be understood like that. Because who can understand that which is the preconception of even the very act of understanding itself? Even the mind cannot move unless being is there at its background. So it is the presupposition of even the faculties of understanding and thinking. Thus, there is no such thing as understanding it, thinking it, or sensing it, or conceiving it, describing it, explaining it, arguing about it, etc. Now, this is, to put it plainly, the origin of everything. The commentators on this Upanishad go into vast details of the method of the effect coming from the cause, how creation was originally effected by this Supreme Being. According to the schools of thought to which people belong or commentators belong, we have got various types of vadas, as they call, or philosophical arguments explaining the relationship between the cause and the effect. The crux of philosophical argument is the cause and effect relationship. It is the difference in the conception of cause and effect relationship that makes the difference in the schools of philosophy. How is the cause related to the effect and vice versa? It is very difficult to understand. Has the effect come from the cause as something different from the cause, or is it not different from the cause? You cannot easily answer these questions, because if the effect is different from the cause, it is not an effect of that cause. You have already assumed that it is different. Then why would you say it is an effect of that cause? If it is not different from that cause, why do you call it an effect of that cause? Naturally, it is the same as the cause. So either way you are caught. You cannot say that it is different from the cause, you cannot say it is the same as the cause. If there is no distinction between the cause and the effect, why should there be two languages or two words used for designating these two items? Where are the two items at all? Or if there is a continuity, a process, as people make out sometimes, connecting the cause with the effect, we have to explain what this process is. The process must be either a movement of the cause into its own self, or it must be the movement of something else. If it is something else, then again it is not the cause. The same difficulty arises. If it is the same as the cause, there is no such thing as the effect. So we are caught up in a great quandary. You have to say that there is no such thing as effect. But if there is no such thing as effect, how comes the creation? If creation has to be explained, the nature of an effect has to be explained. But you cannot understand what an effect is, and therefore you cannot understand what creation is. This is the extent to which philosophy can go when it stretches its arguments to the logical limits. But philosophers do not argue about merely to get defeated. Their purpose is to find a solution. It may be that you face a wall in front of you whenever you argue about any object into the depths of it. But a solution has to be found out for the appearance of this enigma of creation, or in principle, the appearance of an effect from a cause. Solutions cannot be found easily. And inasmuch as intellectually or logically a satisfactory explanation cannot be found for explaining the relationship between the cause and the effect, there are thinkers who hold that the doctrine of creation is not an explanation or a narration of a historical event that took place sometime. It is not that somebody did something once upon a time and something happened and we are talking about it today. Creation does not mean that. Especially people like Shankara hold this view, that creation is a necessary assumption on the part of the individual for the purpose of the ascent of the individual to the Absolute. It may be there or it may not be there, that is not the point. But it has to be accepted as being there. As we have observed some time back, that certain assumptions in mathematical equations are called for. They are pure assumptions, they are not objectively existed. Like an X in equation. It does not exist, it has no meaning. but it has a tremendous meaning, you know very well. And it solves a problem. When it solves a problem, it extinguishes itself automatically. It itself is not there. So there can be a so-called non-existent thing assumed to be really there and capable of solving a very serious problem, and having solved the problem, it itself getting withdrawn automatically. The purpose of the teachings of the Upanishads is something quite different from giving a story or telling you a tale of what happened once upon a time. This is a very important point emphasized again and again by Shankaracharya in his commentaries. That is, we are not understanding the implication behind the teachings of the Upanishads. They are not grandmothers telling us stories. They are giving us medicines like physicians for an illness in ourselves. When doctors give medicines to patients, they employ various methods. Those methods may have various meanings from their point of view and from the point of view of the patient. The methodology is not important, but it is important for the purpose of the administration of the medicine. The intention is something else. The intention is to cure the disease. Likewise is the intention of the Upanishad. It understands very well that a phenomenon cannot be explained unless certain assumptions are already made which are acceptable to the present condition of the human mind. There is no use arguing about whether creation exists or not. It is taken for granted that it exists because we see the world. No one doubts whether the world exists or not. So you have to take a stand which is acceptable from the point of view of the immediate reality perceived. And Uddalaka follows this technique of teaching like a good psychologist. His question is not whether creation exists or not, and how it came. That is not the argument, because there is no use speaking about a concept in the mind which cannot be practically demonstrated from the point of view of the present degree of reality in which the student is placed. It is taken for granted. That means to say, effect is, the world is, creation took place. I shall take you to a point later on from this assumption to something quite different from what you expected. From the acceptance of the fact that creation is, which is easily done of course, the mind is taken gradually to the point where it understands that there is no such thing as creation. But it cannot be asserted at the beginning itself. It has to be concluded later on by a gradual ascent of thought through a calculation of logic, step by step without missing a single link in the chain of argument. And this chain of argument is followed in a very interesting manner by Uddalaka. There was creation. Let us take for granted. And therefore, there must be a creator. How can there be creation without a creator? The creator was the absolute being. This is what I posit as the ultimate reality. And what could be the process of creation and the cause for creation? The intention of the creator is the cause for creation. The will of the artist is the cause for the manufacture of the effect or the product in the form of a sculpture or an architectural piece or a painting, etc. the intention, the will, the original meditation or tapas, as sometimes it is called, of the Supreme Being is the cause of creation. It willed. Tadaitthata bahusyam prajayaya. May I see the drama of my own manifestation? This is the will. And it alienated itself into an effect, like the pot being created out of clay. So, an interesting assumption is already made that the effect is not really substantially different from the cause. Just as pot is not different from clay substantially, the effect in the form of this creation and every stage in the process of creation is not different substantially or in a sense from the cause, which is pure being. And according to the doctrine of this particular teaching in the Chandogya Upanishad, the original creation, the first creation of Agni, this is also a point made out in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad also. We have studied this aspect of creation when we went through the fourth section of the first chapter in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The first creation was of fire, Tattejo Asrijata. And at every stage of the argument, Uddalaka refers to these effects as gods or deities, devatas. They are not material objects. The fire or the water or the earth that we will be speaking of are not material things. Devata is the word used to designate these items. They are substantially, essentially identical with the Supreme Being Himself. So how can you not identify their importance with the importance of the Supreme Being Himself? Teja Aichata. There is a chain action taking place in creation. The Supreme Being, you may tentatively call it A, will, may become B. Now, the original will of A, charged into the being of B, has a tremendous effect upon B. The creative will of A works through B and it manifests itself into a further activity on the part of B, which again wills, may I become C. C wills, may I become D. So there is a downward descent into greater and greater forms of particularization and diversification until the largest conceivable diversity in the form of this world is here before us. The Supreme Being, Sat, the pure being, will, may I be another. It became fire, principle, universally operating everywhere. That will, and it became the water principle operating everywhere. Tateja Aichata Bahusyam Prajayaya Iti Tadapotrayata. The waters congealed into solid objects and became the earth principle. Not necessarily this little globe of the earth, but anything that is earthy everywhere, physical in its nature. Tat apo asrijata tasmat yatra क्वच शोचति स्वेदतेव पुरुषः तेजस एव तदध्यापो जायन्ते. Whenever there is heat felt in the body, there is an expression of liquidity like perspiration, says the Upanishad. Heat in the form of fever or for any other reason whatsoever is seen to produce an effect in the form of water being oozed out. The example given here is when you are grieved, when you are perspiring, etc., etc., you feel that the heat generated within yourself, either due to sorrow or due to fatigue, becomes the cause of the exudation of perspiration. By this, the connection between fire and water is explained. From water comes earth. Ta apaichanta bhavya siyama prajayaya prajaye mahiti ta annamasrijanta. Water produces food, anna. In the language of the Upanishads, food means matter. Anything physical or material is called food. Ultimately, anything that is external to consciousness is food. An object of thought is food. That was produced out of the condensation of the water principle. Now, these elements mentioned here, fire, water and earth, are what are usually called the unmixed elements. They are the pure principles of creation. Later on, they get mixed in certain proportion for the manifestation of grosser elements. The fire and the water and the earth that we see with our eyes. So what the Upanishad speaks of here as fire, water and earth are not the physical fire and the water and the earth. They are the super physical elements called tanmatras or something even superior to that. These tanmatras are mixed or blended in certain proportion. Now here in the case of this particular context of the three elements mentioned, for the purpose of the expression of the physical fire, three elements have to be joined in some proportion. This is called Trivrtkarna in Sanskrit. Trivrtkarna is the threefold mixing of the original principles, tanmatras, namely fire, water and earth, in such a way that a particular element contains half of itself and one-fourth of the other two. So you have got in every element, element of every other element also. So pure elements are never available in this world. They are all a mixture of all others. This is called Trivrtkarna. Triplication. The mixing of three attributes, substances in proportion. when there is water in plenty, there is food also in plenty. This is what the Upanishad tells us in this connection. Yatra kvacha varshati tadeva bhuyasthamannam bhavati adibhya eva tadadhi anna adyam jayate. Everything is produced out of these elements. All the variety in this world, whatever be the number and the quantity of the variety in this world, all this is an expression of these three elements. Just as we are told that every color is a mixture in some proportion by permutation and combination of three essential colors. There are only three colors, only three substances ultimately, and everything else is constituted in some way or the other in some proportion of these three elements alone. Every form of creation is a manifestation thereof. What are these creations? Apart from the triplicated gross elements, fire, water and earth, which we may call inorganic existence in our language, there are organic bodies also. These organic bodies have also come out on account of the mixture of these elements only. There are various types of organisms. Those which sprout up from the earth, like the plant, the tree, the vegetables, etc. They are called udbija, that which bursts forth from the earth and come out. That is one kind of organic creation, the vegetable kingdom. There are other beings who come out bursting through eggs, not like plants coming from the earth, but egg-born beings. These are another type of organic beings. There are others who come out of the womb of the mother. They are called jivaja or jarayuja. There is a fourth item which is called swedaja, coming out of dirt, stink, sweat, etc. All these varieties of organic creation are also made possible on account of the substance of their bodies being provided by these elements alone. The entry of consciousness in various proportion and intensity into these bodies is responsible for the variety of these organic bodies. They are different from one another on account of the intensity of mind present there or consciousness present there. The lesser is the degree of the manifestation of consciousness in a particular body, the less is the capacity of the organism in every respect. The more is the intensity, of course, the greater is the capacity. Tesham khalvesham bhutanam trini vahu bijani bhavanti andajam jivajam udbijam. So these are the organic substances, bodies, living beings who have also come out as effects from these supreme beings, the original gods, fire, water and earth. Now the Upanishad says, the Supreme Being willed through these manifested parts, may I reveal myself in this multiform of creation. Sa iyam devata aichata hanta aham ima tisro devata anena jivenatmana anupravishya namarupe vyakarvaniti. May enter into these bodies, into these three elements that I have created, fire, water and earth, and through them may I become further manifold by means of the triplication of these elements. Tasam trivrtam trivrtam ekaikam karvaniti sevam seyam devata imastisro devata aneneva jivena atmana anupravishya nama rupe vyakarot. Tasam trivrtam trivrtam ekaikam karot. Name and form came into existence on account of this action of multiplication brought about by the triplication of the elements by the will of the Supreme Being. So the whole world is nothing but nama and rupa, name and form. There is a particular shape, and that you call a form. And it has got a name also, by which you distinguish one form from the other. Minus name and minus a particular shape of a particular object, what is that object? It does not exist. The three dimensions of an object, length, breadth and height and weight, and the features are which are sensible to the perceptive organs are the constituents of the object. And if these sensations are not there, if these features of three dimension are not there, there would be no objectivity at all. And therefore there would be no nomenclature of any kind. So there would be no name and form. So what is this world ultimately? It is a formation of a single substance which originally became threefold, fire, water and earth, and then divided itself into manifold forms further, to which many names have been given. Thus, what is this universe of diversity before us? It is the one being alone, except that nothing is. It was said, being alone was. Now we have to say, being alone is. Even after creation, that being alone is. Not that it was only once upon a time in ancient times, and not now, Even now when there is the so-called creation or the manufacture of the variety, it has not ceased to be. The variety is not there on account of the fact that the causative factors of this variety are also constituted of the substance of this being alone. That which causes the difference of one thing from another is also that being only manifest in some other form. So how can there be difference? If the differentiating factor itself is a part of that which is differentiated, then there is no such thing as differentiation. So we have a world which is only notional ultimately. It is in the mind. Well, we need not go into the subject as to where this mind is situated and whether the mind is, whether the object is in your mind or my mind. That is another subject into which we shall enter later on. It is not anybody's mind. It is a consciousness that vibrates in some particular manner and makes it appear that there is something other than itself. As some analogies make out, that the appearance of the multiplicity of the world is something like the circular shape of the fire that you see in the vigorous movement of a firebrand. If you very vehemently circulate or turn round a torch, lit torch, you will find there is a circle of fire or light in front of you. There is no circle, but it is an optical illusion created before you on account of the intense velocity or the movement of the torch. So a vibration of consciousness in a particular manner is the object. The object is not there. And therefore, what you call creation is nothing but consciousness appearing in a particular manner due to a vibration of it, a particular density of it, a movement of it in a particular manner. So being alone was and being alone is even now in the form of this creation. So again we are brought to the point of the conclusion that there is no creation, it is being that appears as creation. But it is not very clear still, so argument goes on further. Yatha nu khalu somya imasti sro devata trivir trivird ekaika bhavati tanme bijanihi. Now, my dear boy, says the father to the son, listen to me how I explain to you this mystery further. You see fire, for instance. You say it is an object. It is an object because you can see it, you can sense it, you can feel it, you can touch it. But what sort of object is this fire? It is constituted of something else. If you dismember it, separate the parts out of which it is constituted, you will find the fire is not there. What you call the gross fire, the triplicated fire, the visible fire, which heats you up and blazes forth, is formed of three elements, the untriplicated originals. The red color that you see in the fire belongs to the original unduplicated fire. From that it is borrowed. The white color, sometimes you see some shapes of streaks of whiteness in the flames of fire. They belong to the water principle in its originality. You may be wondering how water can be there in the fire, because we have already said every element contains every other element by duplication. So there is a proportion, some percentage of every element in every other. The whiteness that you observe in the flames of fire or the burning mass of fire belongs to the untriplicated water, and the blackness or the darkness in the flames, that belongs to the earth element in the untriplicated form. So where is the fire? The redness goes to the untriplicated fire principle, the whiteness goes to the water, and the blackness goes to the earth. So you have withdrawn the constituent from the fire and taken back these effects into their causes. So fire ceases to be fire. When you pull out every thread from your cloth, cloth ceases to be. So in the case with fire, yadagne rohitam rupam tejasastad rupam yat shuklam tadapam yat prashnam tadannasya apagad agni ragnitum. Thus the firewood or the fireness, you may say, of fire has gone by the withdrawal of the constituents thereof. The whole creation is only a matter of words. It is only a technique of language. It is only a way of speaking. It is not really there. Vacharambhanam vikaro namadheyam trini rupani teva satyam. Hari Om Tat Sat.